Upon returning home, I found two or three persons there who frequently came to our house on a Sunday. This morning they had brought us a few necessaries, some one thing and some another, so that we were comfortably supplied throughout that day. Surely, thought I, God is opening the windows of heaven and raining down mercies upon me, so richly is He supplying all our need. Oh, how my poor soul was carried away with matter of praise and thankfulness to my God for His astonishing kindness to me, and the most unworthy of all His saints, the very chiefest of all sinners. Oh, how I wondered that the ministers whom I was then in the habit of hearing never talked of the glorious things of God's wonderful deliverances, both in providence and grace to His people. But I was soon brought to see the reason, because they were themselves utter strangers to these deliverances. And how could they enter into those things which their eyes had not seen, nor their hands handled, nor their ears heard, nor their souls feasted on? Had these things been experimentally known in their own souls, they must have spoken of the things they had handled and felt. As soon as I discovered that they knew nothing of these things in their own souls, I declared that I did not believe God had sent them to preach, and that I was sure they were blind guides, wolves in sheep's clothing. This so exasperated them and their people against me, and that they could neither bear the sight of me nor endure to hear my name. "Oh, shocking," said some of them. "Have you heard what John Warburton says of our dear minister? He says that God has never sent him to preach, and that nearly all the ministers who come to our place are blind and dead." "Oh," cried one of the pious ones, "I wish he was dead, for there is no peace where he is." "Yes," said another, "I wish he was out of the country." But still I stuck to my text, that if God had sent them, they must come with God's message, and trace the footsteps of the flock, and pick up the stumbling blocks from the path, and cast up the highway and lift up the standard for the people. One or two of the people began to see as I saw, and to think that surely their ministers were out of the secret. This enraged them still more. "What," said they, "he has poisoned the mind of such a one, and there will never be any peace where he is." Then they would set upon me quite enraged, but this never moved me. God gave me such boldness and liberty to clear my conscience before them all, time after time, with a "Thus saith the Lord," that they could not stand against it, either parson or people. Sometimes, indeed, I did think that I would take no notice, whatever the ministers should say, but would try to be quiet like the rest, and if there were things I did not like, why, I would leave them, and pass my time away more peaceably. By this means, I thought I should have more friends, which, as I was very poor and much tried in circumstances, would be much better for me. But when I went again and heard the minister with his "ought to do," his "should do," "might do," and his "duty to do," oh, how my very soul rose up against such doctrine. No sooner was I out of the chapel than I was obligated to go right smack at it and pull it all to pieces. Thus I set all in a blaze, and it was thought an unpardonable thing that I should speak against the minister. I, who was so poor and lived in a cellar, who had not half a belly full of victuals and scarcely clothes to cover my nakedness. To think that I, of all people, should take upon me to find fault with the minister was unbearable. But the greatest mortification to them was that they could not confound me with the word of God. Oh, how they did watch my goings out and my comings in! With many an anxious wish did they hope to be enabled to say, "Ah, so would we have it." But God preserved me with a tender conscience, so that I was enabled in a small measure to live the gospel, as well as to stand forth and vindicate it. And how their pious minister did at times rave and rage against me in the pulpit, holding me up as the poor bigoted antinomian, an enemy to holiness and good works. Shortly after, however, it was proved that this pious minister had made too free with a female, and he was discharged from the place, whilst the poor antinomian stood the storm and was brought through all and was preserved from bringing a reproach upon the truth. But I must return to the happy enjoyment I had in seeing the goodness of God, in putting into the hearts of these people to bring us so bountiful a supply at such a time of need. One brought some butter and sugar, another a loaf of bread, and another some potatoes and a little pork. Oh, how my tongue was loosed to speak forth his praise, for we were provided for as richly as kings and princes. Nay, I envied no man's situation on earth, for I had everything that my soul and body wanted, plenty of provisions in the house, and the love of my God shed abroad in my heart, which indeed maketh rich and addeth no sorrow. The next day I finished my work and procured a fresh supply. Surely, thought I, never can I again distrust so gracious, so merciful, so long-suffering and faithful a covenant God and Savior, who has kindly brought me on to the present day. But I have always found, and believe I ever shall, in this vale of tears, that whenever I have had a sweet day of prosperity, the day of adversity has been set over against it. The next trial that I had was a keen one indeed. My landlord began to want me out of his cellar, for I suppose he began to think that I should never pay my rent. And indeed, there was little appearance of it at that time, for my wife, who was a fruitful creature, much too fruitful, many thought, for the times in our situation, was again in the family way. My landlord sent for me, and told me that he wished me to leave his premises and get another house, as he wanted the cellar himself for a shop for his loom. I answered him that I would endeavor to get another place as quickly as possible, and indeed I tried all I could for a long time. It really seemed for some time as if nobody would let me one. At last my landlord lost all patience and told me the shop he wanted and the shop he would have, whether I had a place to go into or not. As I owed him about £4 for rent, he put the bailiffs in to take an inventory of my few goods. Indeed, they were so few that if they had been sold, they would not have fetched much money. Then the devil, unbelief, and carnal reason set to work pretty sharply. Now, indeed, thought I, it is all over with me. There are £4 due for rent, and not 4 pence in the world have I towards paying it. In a few days my bed, my loom, even dishes and spoons must be sold. Not a friend did I know who could help me with 10 shillings. What shall I do? I exclaimed. Whither shall I go? Oh, how it will rejoice my enemies, who have been waiting for my halting. Now they will say, so would we have it. But the greatest trial of all was that God hid his face from me. I tried every possible way to get the money, but all in vain. At last I went to the overseer of the parish, but he informed me that I did not belong to his parish, but to the next one. So he gave me a shilling and told me that he should remove me and all my family to my own parish the following day. I did not like this at all, but I was obliged to comply. Oh, what a night I passed through! How my soul was torn to pieces! Oh, thought I, how will professors and profane rejoice when I am in the workhouse? Then again a little hope would spring up that perhaps the parish would pay my rent rather than that I should go into the poorhouse. The following day the overseer came, and I and my wife and three children went with him, and a weeping journey we had of, I think, 3 miles. Upon arriving there, we found that the overseer of the parish was not at home, and we therefore had to wait till he came in. His wife was very cross with us, but my poor soul was so broken down that she might have wiped her shoes upon me, and I should not have turned again. At last I told her that I was very sorry we were under the necessity of troubling her, and that it was my heart's desire that if it were the Lord's will, she might never be in the same situation in which we then were. At this she became quite pleasant, and fetched some provisions, and was very agreeable, which quite revived me, for I saw that the Lord could soften the heart in a moment, and cause even enemies to pity his people in captivity. In the evening the overseer came home, and when I told him my pitiful case, he heard me with great patience, and expressed a great deal of sorrow for me. He said, however, that he could not pay my rent, and that the best thing I could do would be to return, and if my goods were sold, I must come to him again, and he would take us to the workhouse. He gave me 2 shillings and 6 pence, and off we came home. I wondered that the man had given me 1/2 crown, for we had no victuals in the house. What a night did I pass through again! I sometimes thought that I should sink into black despair. How it would grieve the church to which I belong, thought I, to hear that I have been forced to go to the workhouse. The church of which I was a member was one of independent principles in Mosley Street, Manchester. Sometimes a little hope would spring up that God would yet open a way for me. And oh, how preciously did these words come to my mind: I will bring the blind by a way that they knew not. I will lead them in paths that they have not known. I will make darkness light before them, and crooked things straight. Isaiah 42:16. And bread shall be given thee, and thy waters shall be sure. Isaiah 33:16. A day or two after this, I finished the work which I had upon my loom, and carried it home to my master, who lived in Manchester. As I was coming out of the warehouse, a thought struck me that I would call upon one of the deacons of the church, whose name was Ramsay, a tailor living in Sudahill. I made up my mind, however, not to say anything to him of the circumstances in which I was, for I thought it would grieve the people to know that they had a member of their church in such a plight. I tried to pass the door, but I could not, so I knocked, trembling all the time. I was received very kindly by the old gentleman, who wondered that I had not called before, and asked me how I and my family were, and how we got on. I was speechless for a time, but at length burst into a flood of tears, for I really thought my heart would have burst with grief, and told him that my goods were about to be sold for rent, and that we were all going to the workhouse. I told him, too, that my greatest grief and sorrow was that the enemies of the truth would say, "So would we have it." The old man smiled and said, "Never fear, John, your goods will not be sold." "Oh, sir," said I, "next Monday is the day for the sale, and there is no possibility, according to my views, of its being prevented." I again burst into a flood of tears, and wished I had never joined their church, for I was afraid they would be reproached on my account. The old man's feelings were overcome as well as my own, and he could hold no longer. At length he asked me if I had seen Mr. Clegg, another deacon, and I told him I had not. "Then," said he, "Mr. Clegg has got the money all ready for you, and has been expecting you to call upon him." "What," said I, "can such a thing be possible? Oh, what shall I do to bless and praise the Lord?" My feelings were such that I could hardly tell what I was or where I was. I went to Mr. Clegg, but I was so overcome with the wonder-working hand of God that it was some time before I could get there. Mr. Clegg himself opened the door to me, and with a sweet smile as pleasant as May, asked me how I was and how I was getting on. I was safe enough from telling, for I was so overcome that all I wanted was to be somewhere alone where I could vent my feelings. He told me that having heard of my situation, he had begged part of the money and had added the rest himself. Many other things, the old gentleman said, and what a pleasure he felt in being the instrument of delivering me out of my calamity. My soul was so full that I could do nothing but weep for joy. I wanted to be on some common where no human eye could see, nor ear hear me, and where I could shout forth the praises of God both with body and soul. The old gentleman gave me the money, and we both wept together for joy. Oh, the feelings I had when I came out of the house, with the money in my pocket and the love, mercy, and glory of God in my heart. My poor soul was truly like a vessel that wanted vent. The first secret place I could find after I got into the street, I crept into, and oh, what praise, thanksgiving, and adoration flowed out of my heart and from my lips unto God for his wonderful, unthought of deliverance. Oh, how the song of Moses melted my soul, and how preciously did it flow out of my mouth. I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song, and he is become my salvation. He is my God, and I will exalt him. Thy right hand, O Lord, is become glorious in power. Thy right hand, O Lord, hath dashed in pieces the enemy. Exodus 15:1-6. I got out of the town in some way or other, but how I knew not, for I had such a weight of glory to carry that at times I had to put my hand upon my mouth until I got into the fields, where I could see no human being, and then I gave vent to body and soul, sometimes dancing and shouting his praises, sometimes on my knees blessing and thanking him. I called him all the endearing names my soul could think of, or my tongue utter, and such glorious views I had of the glory of God, both in providence and grace, that I was so lost at times that I did not know where I was or where I was going. At last it struck my mind that I ought to go home and let my poor wife know the wonderful deliverance that God had wrought for us, and then I went on as hard as I could walk, singing, praising, and blessing and glorifying God with all my soul and with all my strength. At last I reached home, and into my little palace I went, for it appeared more like a palace than a poor cellar. I found my wife weeping, and almost exhausted for want of something to eat. I could not for a moment conceal the wonders that God had wrought for us. "Cheer up, woman," said I. "Why weepest thou? God has sent us the rent, every farthing of it, and something to spare. I have it in my pocket." As I spoke thus, I pulled out the money and put it upon the table. Poor thing, when she saw the money, she almost fainted away. She did not at that time know the Lord for herself. I counted the money and found that with that which I had drawn for my work and a little that Mr. Ramsay had given me before I went to Mr. Clegg, and we could pay the rent and have nearly 20 shillings left for provisions. We both wept together like two children. I told her that this God was my God, and I believed in my heart that I should live to see him as her God too.